Welcome to the Speed Trap Podcast. I'm Betsy.
And I'm Sophie. Join us weekly to stay updated on the latest racing news.
And to hear our thoughts and opinions on each topic.
And today we're doing an information lap for the week of February 7th.
So let's jump in talking about exactly what is behind me, which is Mr. Lewis Hamilton breaking his silence at long last.
Breaking his
and
silence.
And singing so much with so little.
Yeah. Now I'm back. Yeah.
I've been gone. Now I'm back.
And he's right. He is back.
And social media, Twitter, Instagram, broke.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, just like media in general, like sports media, or, well, Formula One, motorsports media. Everyone was like, does this mean he's not retiring? What does it mean? Like, that was like the main takeaway from it, is that does this mean he's actually confirming he's coming back, or is he just announcing his return to social media? So what do you think it means?
I mean, this is kind of exactly what I was expecting from him, honestly.
Just vague.
I think, you know, very just like, it's a little cheeky, you know?
Uh-huh.
You know, it's very subtle at the same time of being like, you, like, excuse me, like emphasizing that he was gone and that like now he's back. But like the timing of it is just too perfect, I think, that I would, I mean, I never expected him to retire either.
No.
So I think maybe he also sort of means that in a subtle way. But I think mainly the car launch is coming up in a couple of days.
The 18th, I think, is Mercedes car launch.
Winter testing's coming up.
Yep.
End of February. And then the rest of winter testing.
And also
in March.
A week from today, the day we're recording, the 7th, the 14th, I believe, is allegedly the day that we're going to find out if Michael Massey keeps his job or not. It's not the results of the investigation. That's March 18th, which we'll talk about in a minute because that's crazy. But
yeah,
I think the week leading up to the potential announcement of what's going to happen to Michael Massey is like also a very cheeky timing of it. He's like, I'll just be here for the week, guys. Minding my own business, but you know I'm watching type of thing. So good for him. But also
still follows zero people.
Yeah. Yeah. But I mean, I think it's so obvious how much power he holds with just how little he had to say for the internet to lose their minds over it and how many people came looking for him. I mean, obviously there's like the extra attention he would get after what happened in Abu Dhabi, but at the same time, I think regardless, he probably would have had such a big, you know, following coming back into it anyway, so says a lot. But what I was going to say too is that he also posted on his Instagram story a video of him running with his coach. So he's like showing to us that he's training again, which is a good sign for him coming back. So that's pretty good news, I think, we got this week.
I mean, to be fair, I think even if Lewis did retire, he would still train. Like,
that's true.
Every day, all the time. I feel like that's just a thing for him, who he is. But you know, I think, I mean, there's only so much we can read into this, right? I think both of us, film majors,
we're looking at the mise-en-scene of the picture to figure out what it means.
He's
in a valley, so he's stuck.
What is that?
He's in a canyon.
Canyon.
Yeah.
Red rocks. I don't know.
Somewhere.
Tetons. Something like that.
Yeah.
So now I'm like, what does that mean? What does that mean?
He's in the Wild West.
Or it's just a cool photo of him, which is also very true.
Sick outfit, you know, he looks pretty chilled out. So maybe he's just saying, I've been out in nature collecting my thoughts and now I'm back into the hellish place that is social media and the F1 media storm. So, yeah. I mean, the sky does look a bit grey, right? Maybe it's like the calm before the storm. Maybe he's going for it. Now we're just really getting too much.
It's actually a really beautiful photo.
It is a great photo.
For real.
I wonder who took it. I wonder if it was a friend or he like has a photographer that comes with him to do. Maybe he was doing a photo shoot for one of his sponsors, and then he was like, just while we're here, can somebody take a casual photo of me? You know?
Could be that. Yeah. So I guess I sort of just expect that he probably just has like a really good photographer friend or something.
Probably.
And they're just hiking out there or like chilling out there.
Yeah. Maybe it was Angela. She's secretly a really good photographer.
Honestly, she could be that woman.
Part of the job requirement of Lewis's trainer is to be a good photographer, to take all the thirst trap photos of him in the gym that he likes to post on social media.
Truly.
Although he's usually taking them himself in the mirror, so, you know.
Also true.
But yeah, speaking of the Michael Massey stuff, so we know that the 14th is supposed to be allegedly the day that we find out whether or not he keeps his job. But we also have seen, I believe it was at the Autosport Awards, right, where Christian Horner was interviewed and he was talking about how F1 is looking to provide more support for the race director next season and providing like potentially a structural change for how that role is like used in the next season. So it could mean that job, all of the responsibilities that Michael Massey had under that title will be divided into multiple titles so that there is less pressure on one individual to do everything right. Because honestly, I do feel bad for him, but at the same time, it's like he seemingly didn't have a grasp on the job. But at the same time, is that like an error of the FIA for appointing all that responsibility to one man? Because clearly it wasn't handled very well by one man. So if you look at it, where does the blame fall? Is it up the ladder further? And I would say probably yes. So, I mean, I do still think Michael Massey is responsible for, you know, what happened, but I think he wasn't given a fair chance to even get in the right position to make the right judgment at the same time. So I think,
yeah,
the FIA looking at expanding that role into multiple roles, because I know when Charlie did it, Charlie Whiting, there were like a support crew. He had like a support team to make decisions with, but Michael Massey seemingly is like alone for most of his job. So good or bad, what do you think what's happening?
I mean, obviously I would like Michael Massey on, frankly. But I do think, you know, that it is still a complicated situation as far as that. And I don't want to solely take out the blame, like you said, just on one person, because it is sort of an institutional problem,
right,
as well.
Right, it's systemic, yeah.
Exactly. So it's not like, okay, just one person messed this up. But also he did mess up, like, yeah, a lot.
Like a lot.
Like a lot. And to a certain point, right, like, you're the boss, the buck stops with you, mm-hmm. You have to make the decision. Whatever happens, you have to own that, mm-hmm. You know, you have to say, okay, like, maybe this is the way that the rules are, and this is the way that I'm going to interpret them, and then if it's wrong or whatever, you made a mistake, and own that, and advocate for change to clarify them. Like,
yeah,
in my head too, I'm like, the race director is not just sitting around being like, what, like, I don't know what the rules are. Like, they should know the rules. He should be looking at the rule book and being like, actually, this doesn't make sense. I know that this has not happened yet, but I would like to clarify this,
right?
You know what I mean? Like, if you're competent and actually care about your job in that way, like, to be really good, you're gonna try to work through the inconsistencies and be very good at your job. Because honestly, like, that role, being race director, is not just like, it's whatever, it's a 9-to-5. Like,
right.
I'll do like the bare minimum, get my paycheck, go home, work for the weekend. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, this is, being race director is, so many people would love to have that job, you know?
Mm. Or maybe they do after this.
Not after this.
I know what you mean. Like, it's definitely a full-time, like, you have to live and breathe the rule book. And it seems like,
yeah,
he never did, or hasn't. Maybe that's what he's been doing over this long break of silence,
yeah,
is, you know, flashcards and, you know, testing himself on the regulations, maybe, because they're going to change, right? The tech regs obviously are changing.
Yeah.
So he needs to know more of the sporting regs, though, than the tech regs. to a certain degree. So
yeah, I guess though, my question now, opinion, what do you think on February 14th will happen? Will he will he stay in? Will he be kicked out? Just off the cuff, like, where's your head at right now?
I wonder potentially if he's going to be used as like the red herring to take the fall for the systemic issue that's happened. You know, they need to place the blame somewhere rather than, and the FIA are notorious for doing that, where they'll like sacrifice one person rather than look internally, is like we've seen previously, right?
Yeah.
So I think there's more of a chance that, so there's two sides to this coin. I think they'll either do that or they'll double down and like be in denial about the whole thing. So I think it's honestly genuinely 50-50, but very polarizing either way. I think nobody will be happy with what happens. But in my head, those are the only two options. They'll either double down in denial and be like, stuff happens, or they'll be like, it was all him. He's the one to blame. We got rid of him. Everything's okay now. So that's my head.
The only reason that I think that he won't leave is that they have not yet done it.
Right. Right.
This all went down early December. That's plenty of time to decide if you want to fire somebody.
Yeah.
And part of me wonders if they're sort of waiting to tell the crowd before, just before winter testing, just before car reveals, well, not even all cars, but just before these certain things, like really big things happen, in order to sort of take the noise off of Abu Dhabi and that issue. But I don't think, you know, just from existing in the F1 community and being on Twitter and these Twitter spaces that we're doing, that I've also been able to join other people's, the crowd on this is not going to let this go at any point.
No.
You know, this is not going to be okay or forgotten.
No.
Not at all.
I mean, I think they're kind of shooting themselves in the foot by leaving it this late, because you'd think they'd want the new season to come in and be all about the new technical regulations and the new cars and potentially the new, you know, who's the new alpha of the field? Will Mercedes remain at the top? Like, we have a new world champion, blah, blah, blah. You think they'd want it to be all about that coming into this season, but because they're leaving it so late, March 18th is when the World Motorsport Council is set to be announcing the results of the internal investigation of the FIA, right? Which is two days before the first race. It's the day of free practice, the Friday free practice of the first race of the season in Bahrain.
Yeah.
So to me, it's like, I think what you were saying there is that you think they're, you know, delaying things to sort of like take the attention off of it. But I think by delaying things, they're just retaining the attention on it, because nobody's going to be talking about the new technical regulations at, you know, Friday practice or qualifying. They're going to be talking about the results of this investigation, regardless of which direction it goes in. And that's all the media pen is going to be asking about, especially Max and Lewis, who certainly probably want to leave this behind them. So I really think if they were going for a distraction technique, they've messed up, and because this is all anybody's going to be talking about. So
yeah, I think that's a really good point. So now in my head is like, why would they want people to still be talking about this?
Exactly.
Like, why are they, unless they just messed up. But it seems like they're purposely putting the attention now on this. Because it's not like car reveal dates and winter testing dates were suddenly like, oh, this is what it's going to be. Like, we all knew winter testing was going to be about then. We all knew car dates were going to be right around then as well. None of this is like shocking.
No.
That's what's so confusing to me.
So yeah, we'll see with that. But speaking of car reveals, we've had one. Haas. Although, let's just say, it was not a chassis reveal. It was just livery. And it wasn't even a real car. It was a rendering of the car. So Haas were like, here's a little taste. This is what the livery is going to be. And it's not even the real one yet. LOL. So
that was the weirdest car reveal.
Yeah.
Ever. Like, what?
It was so Haas of them to do it that way, though.
Oh, my word.
They were like, let's just get out of the way, because nobody cares about our car, really. Let's just be the first one out of the gate. So I think that's hilarious. But also it's interesting because we know that the technical structure it has changed a lot, because with the budget cap, Ferrari basically had to like dump a bunch of staff because they wanted to retain them, but they couldn't because of the budget cap. So what with the partnership they had with Haas, basically they've made it like they've seconded some Ferrari like aerodynamicists and engineers to Haas to work on the Haas car, and now Haas is like HQ for chassis design is in Maranello at Ferrari's headquarters. So this could be huge things for Haas. Like, their factory is now like based in Ferrari's factory. So and it's now headed, like, their car, their technical department is now headed by former Ferrari chief designer Simone Resta, right? Which is huge.
Right.
So that's very interesting to me, because we know that Haas outsourced a lot of their car parts. I think they still do.
Yes.
To Dallara, I think, who...
Yeah, I believe so, yeah.
Who are the company that manufacture Formula 2 and Formula 3 chassis. So that's interesting. But they're still working with Dallara, I believe. But what do you think is going to... Is this going to change a lot? Because Haas have now adopted this whole, like, Ferrari... Haas is becoming, like, Ferrari Junior with all these ex-Ferrari engineers. Or,
yeah,
I guess they're still Ferrari engineers, but they're just sort of being, like, moved over to the baby team of Haas. Kind of like a Toro Rosso Red Bull situation, right? So do you think this is going to improve things for Haas a lot?
I don't know. I really don't. Because I think it's great that, A, that they're able to stay within the sport. I think that's really important.
Right.
And secondly, I think it's also really good to have people who have excellent experience at a top-tier team.
Mm-hmm.
The Ferrari is... Where are we at? Ferrari now. Having that experience with a team like Ferrari, sorry, my brain just keeps shutting off right there because I keep thinking of all the really bad things that they did.
Okay, but here's the thing though. The illegal stuff was all their engine, so it wasn't their like aerodynamics department.
Okay, fair. All right. Well, let's just okay.
So there you go. But right. Is the new era more so about the engine though? I think it's supposed to be, right? Because the change in fuel has made it so much different for the build of the engine that and the way the cars... I'm not an engineer or a mechanic, so what I'm saying probably going to sound really bad or wrong or confusing, but I've been reading that it's like all about the cornering of the car, the aerodynamics, so the engine has to be adapted so much based on how the cars are going to have to take corners now, which is going to be supposedly a lot different than what they're doing now. And then the new fuel's a huge issue, so something about that. So I think it's more of like a power unit based season than it is going to be an aerodynamics based season, even though the aerodynamics are going to be so different from, or not so different, but you know, like different
pretty
from
different.
Yeah.
But I think also with that is it's, I guess, a little bit more, the engine is going to be kind of what they can really change up, I guess.
Sure, yeah.
Where aero now, right now, just because it's a whole new set of rules, it's sort of like, all right, this is our baseline here. We kind of have to do like a version one. And version one, I think, for a lot of them is going to be pretty similar.
That's
you know?
True.
Because they got to follow the rules. It's like, here's our first draft, basically, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's like, okay, like if you're writing a paper and it has to contain all of this stuff, it's sort of all going to look very similar, right?
Yeah.
You're all going to be reading the same kind of book report, basically, you know?
Yeah, that's a good point. But it is the first draft season for all these cars.
Yeah.
I know, though, when F1 were sort of giving examples, they gave three different interpretations of the rules. Like, they gave three different chassis based on the interpretation of the rules, and then the one they made, you know, the one that was like holographic, that car,
yeah,
that was supposedly the one that was closest to all what all the teams were doing, which is like looking at the Haas chassis, the virtual one, is kind of similar to that one. So there is room for interpretation, right, with how things are going to be made. And Haas usually is the one that sort of goes against the grain. So to see them being so inside the box this year, so far, with a virtual car, it feels like maybe they are looking to be more fighty. Because we know I was going to say, just because the last few years were development years, right? They like froze their chassis. Their like 2019 chassis was basically what they used for 2020 and 2021. So they put everything into this next generation. So hopefully it works out for them.
Well, that leads me to my next point, is that I saw that Gunther Steiner, team principal of Haas, said around the car launch that he expects Haas to be fighting for points this season.
Right.
And I was very, I don't know if caught off guard is the right word, because I expect a team principal to be, you know, rooting for their team and like confident and stuff. But I was like, fighting for points for Haas over the last couple of years is crazy. You know, like, that's saying 2019 Williams saying, we're going to fight for points. And it's like, okay, sure.
But look what they did, though. So maybe they'll follow in the footsteps of Williams.
It's true. They might. They absolutely might.
Maybe. Is this an issue for Valtteri and Guan Yu Zhou now that Haas might be coming back?
Well, I did say this, so that in 2018, Haas was best of the rest, right? Like, it was.
They were up there for sure.
They were almost best of the rest, or they were best of the rest. They were, like, fighting for being best of the rest, though. You know, like, that was not something that you were like, oh, it's Haas and Williams, like, meh.
No, they definitely were. Yeah, Haas finished, in 2018, they finished fifth, so they were right in the middle.
Right behind McLaren?
Ahead. So it was Merck, Ferrari, Red Bull, Renault, Haas.
Renault.
Then McLaren. Oh, then Force India, then Sauber, so Alfa Romeo. And then Toro Rosso, then Williams, and then Force India Sahara, which was the X. That's when it like transitioned into Force India Mercedes. So they came seventh. So yeah, so Haas was P5 ahead of McLaren, which hilarious. But I'd like to see Haas fighting. I want to see Mick Schumacher get the opportunity to develop his skills a little bit rather than just racing his teammate, which, let's be honest, he wasn't even getting that chance because his teammate was miles behind him all the time. So, you know.
I mean, they were both minutes behind the field. Like, it's.
Yeah.
You just don't want to see that as, I feel like, a fan of the sport. You just don't want to.
Right.
See something like failing that badly.
Right. It's like they were almost there just to be there. Like, they weren't there to compete. They were just filling up the space. Like,
they were like an entry ticket, but like they didn't perform. Like, it's just like they were just there.
Yeah, definitely. So hopefully this new technical shakeup inside of Haas and their closer tie to Ferrari is going to help them. Although I think that entirely depends on how well Ferrari is doing also. So we'll see what happens there. This is why the picture I chose is a picture of Mattia Binotto and Gunther Steiner as my background, because I was like, and they're old buddies, because Gunther used to work at Ferrari, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
And he is Italian, so, you know.
A long time ago, though.
A long, long time ago. He also worked, I believe, at Red Bull briefly, so, you know. Gunther's been all over the place. Mm. We did, if you guys are interested, a while ago we did an episode where we detailed who all the team principals were and their backgrounds in motorsport and how they came to be where they are. We should do an updated one for Williams now, and also Alpine, among others, because I believe we still did it when Cyril was still involved in the sport. So,
aww, Cyril.
Miss him. Also, hope those rumors are true about him becoming head of Red Bull's engine department. That'd be sick.
I would freak out.
So sick.
How would that happen?
I mean, he knows his stuff. He used to work in engines, so hopefully.
I know, but like Cyril and Christian? Cyril and Christian?
You know how it's like love-hate with them? Maybe it's like a love-love now that they're not against each other. Maybe they respected each other so much that they like, you know, when like the like stereotypical like when like a boy has a crush on a girl, he'll like bully her slightly just so that she gives him attention. Like maybe it's that sort of thing where they're like, just look at me, you know, to make it weird.
No, it's weird.
But you know, speaking of shakeups, technical shakeups. Alpinas have been having a little bit of a big bit of a shakeup, right? With I mean, they lost Alain Prost as non-executive director. He left, and we know that that was sort of like a negative, you know, parting, because I believe he sort of said that he was like not happy with the direction the team was going in, I believe. And then Marcin Budkowski, who was sort of their like, you know, pseudo team principal, he was the executive director of Alpine. He's the guy that you would see on the pit wall who would be, you know, classified as like the equivalent of team principal. So he is gone.
I'm still sad that Alain Prost left.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, no, it's sad to see like another like legend leave.
Yeah.
I
think he might have gone back to MotoGP, because that's where he was like his like bread and butter was MotoGP, but he's still like incredible for coming into four wheel racing. I mean, good for him. So but they've brought in Pat Fry, or well, he was already in. He's now the chief technical officer, and they've got Matt Harmon, who is now their technical director. I believe Matt Harmon used to work for Mercedes, and Pat Fry was an ex-Ferrari. I believe Pat Fry was Ferrari during the Schumacher era. And then he was also a McLaren engineer, I think, during the Hamilton Alonso era. So he has worked with some hot-headed people. Maybe, you know, the reunited with Fernando Alonso could be a good thing.
Yeah.
So that'll be fun.
This is also a bit random, and I'm sorry to suddenly throw this in a little bit.
No,
I don't know if this was on our list of things to talk about, but I just remembered. Is that Honda's boss, who was always at Red Bull track and like always with the with them, right? I'm gonna butcher his name, but Yamamoto,
yeah.
Well, Honda like pulled out, right? We know that.
Right.
Left their engine in Red Bull's hands, but he remains a consultant for the team.
Right.
So that's something to keep in mind, is that, well, I don't know. It's kind of like, okay, they won the championship. I don't know if I'm using air quotes or not. Do I feel bad about that? I don't know. I'm so confused.
Everyone's confused. Don't even worry. Use air quotes.
I don't know.
We don't know.
I'll use just one hand. There we go. But it's like, would you have stayed if you had not won?
I don't know. I mean, I know that Honda has agreed to continue providing engine components, or maybe just engines, to Red Bull's new factory for engines. So I know that that partnership is remaining. It's just not going to be called Honda.
It just seems like it's changed a little bit. It sounded, let's see, probably mid-summer. Is that when they announced the news? Honda was
around,
leaving?
Yeah.
Round up?
Yeah.
It sounded like at that time they were like, okay, bye, we're out of here. But now since
the wind,
since Abu Dhabi, like the wind has shifted a little bit.
Yeah.
It seems like they're not as eager to leave the sport, which I mean, I wouldn't hate that. I wouldn't either, I think. But I do think that it's interesting, is like they weren't really wanting to stick around for the long run, and then it shifted and they're kind of like, oh. But it's still kind of confusing to me, because, you know, Red Bull still has what it takes, for sure.
Yeah.
Like, it's not like they're a team that's been suffering for a long time.
Yeah.
Like, it was so close this year. Like, Max could have won, Lewis could have won. It was really a toss-up. And then
if Sergio was more consistent, they definitely could have been in a closer fight for the Constructors, for sure. I mean, they were close for, like, quite a bit of the season, only towards the end, like, Valtteri found his feet again, and it sort of, like, they went off into the wind with it, Mercedes did, so.
Yeah. Honestly, just, we'll talk about that more later, but I still can't get over how both Perez and Bottas were so incredibly inconsistent this year.
Mm-hmm.
How is it that neither of them got a 1-2 on the podium with their teammate?
That's wild.
And McLaren did. Like, I just...
The only team to get a 1-2. Like,
the only team.
Not even, like, Ferrari or Alpine. Nobody. No. Just McLaren. Which is great. Also, that's another thing briefly to talk about. I was reading an article, I think it was last week, where Daniel has said that he's really committed to staying at McLaren potentially for the rest of his career, like ride out his last few years in F1 at McLaren.
One final year?
Which could be a good thing, because it would mean that he's going to be with that team longer, because we know when he was with Red Bull, like, he was used to that and he didn't have to relearn everything over and over, and then he was good. But because he's been jumping around so much, he's had less of an opportunity to stick in one place and garner his skill set, because the McLaren car is obviously very different to the Renault car he drove, to the Red Bull car he drove. So hopefully that is a good thing for him, but also him saying a commitment like that, it doesn't mean that he's not, you know, fishing around for potential new drives if McLaren are like, okay, we're like ending things with you because we've lost faith. So does that mean it could end his career early? Do you think that's a good thing that he's come out and said that, or do you think he's like risking it, or do you think he's just saying that to save face and then he is getting nervous and is looking around, because he is committed to McLaren, I believe, till 2022. Like, this is his last confirmed contract year. I think there's like half the grid.
So.
Isn't it like half the grid is out of a contract? So
again, it's exciting.
Silly season this year is going to be so good.
Well, I think that this year is going to decide a lot of things, because Daniel already had a season at McLaren. If he can't get it together and bring in more consistency and more points, then I think that McLaren is going to get a little bit restless and be like, well, I don't know if this is the best fit. And I think also the same with Aston Martin, right? I don't know how they're going to feel with Seb if he can't get it together enough to be consistent. And oh my god, you're so mad at me right now.
I'm not mad. I'm just like, I'm not mad at you. I'm just like mad at what's happening. Like, because I just hit my mic, so sorry if you can hear that. But I'm just like, why does it have to be like the ending? Like, he just, you know, he just did the race of champions. He was so good. Like,
what hurts though is, you know, him saying, I don't want to go to another team unless we have a chance of like winning races.
Yeah.
And Aston Martin was nowhere near close to that at all.
I think he put faith in the racing point of 2020, like really being up there.
But I think he also probably put some trust in the name of Aston Martin.
Totally.
Like, there's a lot of history there. It's like trustworthy, kind of.
And but Sebastian's a James Bond fan too, so that must have been cool for him. I know what you mean though.
Well, this is another question I've been thinking about a lot, and I've mentioned it before. I think we both have talked about this before, but in my mind right now, as I keep thinking about how 2022 is going to look.
Yeah.
I think the biggest things that I'm focusing on as far as what it means for drivers is their contracts come to an end, which also, if they're not, even if their contracts aren't at an end, like, it's so loose, you know, this whole sport means nothing. Contracts mean nothing.
Mm-hmm.
But is Lawrence Stroll caring more about winning and more about his team making money and just being like close to championships and things like that, that he would take his son Lance out of his seat?
That's true.
And I know we've talked about this before. So I think 2022 will kind of decide that as well. especially as the team develops, right? Because it's still kind of a clean slate for Aston Martin. Last year was them trying to figure out, okay, what are we as a different team than Racing Point? Just trying to like stand on their own 2 feet, right? Yeah. But now 2022 is kind of a clean slate for every team. And so if they can't get it together enough to be competitive, to be in points regularly, I think that'll be a big problem. And they're going to look at their drivers, and then they're going to look really close at their cars as well. Mm-hmm. But to a certain point, you kind of put drivers on a chopping block, I think.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Like we were saying with Michael Massey, like do you use the driver as the red herring?
All right. Let me interrupt just 1 second. I'm sorry. You don't want to be Williams. And I love Williams with my whole heart, but you don't want to be Williams.
Oh, no.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Crashing to the bottom. You just don't want to be Williams.
Speaking of, what about Latifi?
Do you think that, like, Williams had, like, just was, like, cursed after...
Valtteri left?
Cursed after... no, like, after Ayrton Senna died, like...
Oh, maybe.
Like, they peaked, and then he died, and then it was just cursed forever and went downhill.
Oh, could be.
I mean, they won a lot of championships after that, but you know what I'm saying.
Well, Jacques Villeneuve was the last Williams champion in, like, 95? That's probably wrong, but...
Wasn't it in 2003?
Oh, you could be right. I don't know what I'm talking about. No. Schumacher was 2003, was he not? Or was he to the... I don't remember. We're going to get slaughtered online. Okay. Jacques Villeneuve.
I'm sorry, I can't remember dates.
I can't either. Don't even worry. I can't even remember what races just happened when we're watching a season, so you're fine.
I am terrible with dates in general. I don't remember anything
Not Jacques Villeneuve, Gilles Villeneuve, right? The dad?
I don't know. Was it the dad?
We're going to get killed online if people listen.
I'm sorry. I'm terrible at history. Okay, names and dates. No, it's a bit much for my brain.
It was Jacques because... Am I completely off base? I could
No, be. I think it was.
Villeneuve does have a championship, right? Formula One championship. 1997!
Was their last win?
Yes. Well, driver win. I don't think constructor. But driver. Oh, no. They finished third in 1998. In the constructors. Well, Damon Hill.
1997. Okay, I'm way off. Who won in 2004? Ferrari?
Schumacher.
But... Where was he?
Ferrari. Yeah. And then Fernando was 05, 06. And then Kimi was 07. And then Lewis was 08. And then Jensen was 09. And then Seb was 10, 11, 12, 13. And then 14 and was then Lewis. 15 Lewis. Was Lewis. 16 Lewis. Was Nico. 17 was Lewis. 18 was Lewis. 19 was Lewis. 20 was Lewis. 21 was Verstappen. Question mark.
Question mark, question mark.
Yeah. Like, I can do, like, all of the thousands, but the ones that I get past...
It's the 90s
that I get a little bit jumbled. And then once I hit the 80s, it's like... no idea.
Mm-mm. No.
But yes.
Apologies.
Apologies to anybody who's, like, a huge history fan or a huge historical F1 nerd. Like, sorry, Sebastian Vettel, I know you're listening to this. I, like... vastly apologize to you for messing things up. You know, you're definitely our biggest fan. But I mean, like, let's just list off quickly while we're talking about it. Contracts. Who's out of a contract?
Mm-hmm.
So it would be Fernando Alonso, mm-hmm. Sebastian Vettel.
Which I think, sorry, I know I shouldn't cut in because we'll forget.
How dare you?
We're talking about. But I think that'll be key. Because we have Oscar Piastri, so are they going to bring him in?
He's taken a year out, too. And he says that he thinks that's a statement of intent from Alpine to give him that seat the next season.
Wouldn't count on him, buddy boy, but I hope so.
Hopefully. I'd love to see him. And then maybe if Aston Martin decide to change things up, maybe they'll take him instead, potentially. Anyway, Carlos, out of contract, 2022.
Do you really think Seb will stick around for 2023?
I want to say yes, but then at the same time, I'm like,
maybe not what you want, though. What do you think?
I don't know. I don't know if I think he wants to be in it as long as he can. I know he said 40 is when he doesn't want to leave or when he doesn't want to race anymore. So
he's got some time, though.
He's got plenty of time, so I don't
think
he would.
That old.
I don't think he would go unless he was forced out, to be honest, because he could have left after Ferrari kicked him aside. He could have, but he didn't.
No, I think he wanted redemption from that.
Yeah. So I think he probably would still be hungry for that. So I think he at least wants to get a few more podiums in, potentially wins.
I wonder if he would ever go back to Red Bull.
I think maybe.
Like, I wonder if that was ever on the table for either him or Red Bull itself. Because, I mean,
that'd be cool.
If you're comparing Sergio Perez and Seb, I mean, there's not a heck of a lot of differences, except that Seb has 4 world championships.
not many differences, just 4 world championships.
But, I mean, they both have, like, 10 years of experience. I mean,
mm-hmm. Sergio a little bit less, but, like, still, you know,
still in the ballpark,
a good amount,
you know?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Definitely. I mean, I'd love to see a Red Bull Seb reunion. I think that'd be cool because there's a building named after him at their factory. So he's their golden boy or their original golden boy. So I think that'd be a cool reunion. Okay, moving on. Speaking of Red Bull drivers, Carlos Sainz, his contract's
honestly,
up.
What a friggin' king though.
Yeah.
Carlos doesn't deserve he deserves way more credit than he gets because
100%.
Not only can that boy drive, he's also freaking chameleon of a driver.
Yep, totally. I have confidence that Ferrari will extend his contract for sure. I think
me too.
They've
me
already
too.
Been like rumors about it happening, so hopefully.
Yeah, it sounds like it might even be in the works like right now.
Oh, totally. I'd be happy if that happened for him. Like, good for him.
Absolutely.
Lance Stroll is indefinite. We don't know what's happening, so potentially could end at 2022. I don't think it will, but that's up in the air. We talked about him. Sergio, what are we thinking? Because we've got some really good F2 juniors right now.
I think it depends on how well Yuki performs this year.
That's true. He's more expendable,
and
I think, than
I know that
Sergio.
Pierre is, like, wanting to get back into Red Bull.
That's true.
But I don't know if Max and Pierre are good teammates. I feel like no. I just feel like no.
Yeah. I think Pierre enjoys being that alpha, too. AlphaTauri. He likes being the alpha. Right, exactly. So I think going back to Red Bull, it would be a huge shift in, like, loyalties and, you know, dynamic for him. So I don't know if would like that.
Sean Todd, like, he is, like, so good at nurturing his drivers and lifting them up and really,
developing
them.
Helmut Marko?
Oh.
Sean Todd? Oh, are you talking about Franz Tost?
Franz Tost, yep. It's all the same.
Yeah, they're all the same.
Oh, no.
No, yeah, Sean Todd is probably a lot more amicable than Christian Horner is. So.
Yeah. Well, Franz Tost, I mean,
you were like Lewis there in that one interview where they were like, Franz Tost said this, and Lewis went, who's Franz Tost? he's just been a king. He's like, I don't need to know who anybody else is. Oh, dear.
Wow. Names and dates, I told you.
Yeah.
Told you.
There we go. I mean, Todd and Toast sound similar, so.
They're both French.
Yes. Anyway.
Oh, Lord.
Yeah, so we'll see for Pierre and Sergio. Who else? Alex. Alex Albon! Oh my god! Yeah, he's on like
that boy better not be dropped. I will.
Yeah.
I'll be very angry.
He's on a yearly, year-by-year extension basis contract, so. I think he will be kept. I mean, Williams just added a new junior. I don't know if any of their current juniors have the potential to step up soon.
I mean, the only one that I would sort of expect would be Jack Aitken or Roy Nassani.
Logan Sargeant.
I think he'll be in a couple years.
Yeah. And then they just... their new guy is in karting.
Yeah, he's in karting still. Yeah. I think. Or just entered single singers.
I think just entered. Yeah,
but he's
yeah.
still... Young. He's still a baby.
And they still have Jamie.
Still that'll be in a couple years.
But I don't think that's ever going to happen. No. Sad to say. Also, Alex, is he still low-key tied to Red Bull?
I think low-key.
Yeah, like it's not like he's still a contracted Red Bull driver, but there's still that relationship because they
But I mean, if we're
him.
Really going to be honest about this, as amazing as Alex or Pierre perform, they're not going to go back to the second Red Bull seat. They're not going to. They're just not. Like, that's just not where Red Bull is at right now. I will be shocked if either of those drivers go back to Red Bull.
What if Max early retirement? Albon, Gasly, Red Bull doubleheader. That'd be sweet.
That guy is going to race until he's like 60.
That's true. I could see Max being a Kimi for sure. 100%.
He's not a Kimi though. Like, he'll be like... Kimi was like,
He's cool. He's a Fernando. Whatever. He's a Fernando.
Kind of, yeah.
I think so.
Hot-headed. Hot-headed. He's like, no, I want to win forever.
Oh, God. Yeah. Okay. Guan Yu's contract is a year-by-year basis, too. So he technically is out of contract at the end of next year.
I don't know how that's going to go.
I don't either.
But I'm pumped. I mean...
He's a good driver.
He is a really
good
driver.
And he brings the Chinese sponsorship money, which is important for Alfa Romeo.
It is. So. Also, first... full-time Chinese F1 driver, which is so exciting.
Yes.
But I think, I know that he's getting a lot of, I can't think of a non-profane word for it, but you know what I mean? Slack? I don't know. Something similar to
getting a lot of slack online. Yeah.
Yeah. He's getting some hate online.
For being a paid driver.
For being a paid driver and people being like, you didn't win F2.
But he was so close. Him and Oscar were like tooth and nail. But like, he's been close. Yeah. Guan Yu's been up there for like a few years. And he's stood the test of time in F2. Like, you see some drivers in F2 like do really well in their first couple seasons or their first season and then they drop off majorly in their second. But he's been up in the fight in the top teams in F2 for like a good 4 years. So he's consistently battling the best of the best in the juniors.
I mean, we also, nobody like squawked when Alex Albon came in or
Lando
came in. They were like, oh, he's second place.
Yeah. I mean, Guan Yu is, you know, he's very good. We know what he's capable of. We've seen him. I don't doubt him.
I will say too, like, you get a driver who wins the championship and then, or wait, did Yuki win? No, he didn't.
Yuki came.
Yes, he did.
Yuki came third.
Why am I struggling so much?
Mick won, and then Callum Ilott, and then Yuki Tsunoda.
Yuki, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, but you bring in like Yuki, who everyone is like, he's the golden boy. I mean, he won F3, and then comes in and then he performs like low-key subpar.
Did he? I don't think he won F3.
Did he not?
I don't think he won anything.
I need help. My brain is dead. I don't know.
No, but Yuki was like the hot shot because he came in as a rookie and rookied his way through F3, then F2, and then got into F1. Like, he had no secondary year in any of the junior series. He came out of nowhere. As this Honda.
Okay, that's
Honda
what I'm thinking
junior.
Of. He didn't win, but he didn't stay more than 1 year in anything.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, that's what I'm But, you know, super talented driver, but he sort of plateaued in F1 for last season, his first season. And then you can also compare it to, like, Nico Hülkenberg, who had an incredible junior career.
Sure, yeah.
Incredible junior career.
He won.
I thought you said
No.
I was like, what?
I was like, no, we don't talk about him. No.
I was like, what happened? What happened?
No, he won GP2, which is the equivalent of F2 now.
F2,
and, like, just had no luck at all in F1. Mm-hmm. Like, Pierre won GP2. Who else? Like, Lewis and Nico Rosberg were GP2 winners, and they did really well. Max never even competed in GP2. That's the other thing. Max came into F1 not even competing in the closest junior series. He leapfrogged mm-hmm. his way in. You know? Similar to Kimi, gotcha. In a way, where he did, mm-hmm. like, 10 races, and then they were like, okay, give him a seat. Yeah. And nobody, like, really complained about Max, either. They were like, oh my god, this guy, he's so cool. And then he did well off the bat, so that's good. But, like, it could have been, like, a complete opposite, where he, like, came into it with so little experience that he completely crashed and burned. Pardon the terrible metaphor,
I guess, all in all, my point is, stop hating on Guan Yu Zhou because he is a paid driver, and B, because he didn't win.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to hear it.
Yeah. I think there's a slight difference between, like, the likes of him and Latifi, for example, who came second in Formula 2, right? He came second the year Nyck de Vries won, so
mm-hmm.
there you go. Nyck gave him a chance either, like, even though he came second.
Nyck de Vries should have been an F1.
He should have, for sure.
I mean, I don't blame Latifi. Like, Latifi was a solid driver, for sure. I mean, obviously, Williams, huge challenge for any rookie, and especially coming in like that, but...
George as a teammate...
Right. But I also think, you know, Williams didn't really have a choice at that point in their life.
Yeah,
you know?
They needed the money.
Because they really needed the money. And I mean, I don't think it was outlandish to choose Latifi. He was outlandish mm-hmm. for Haas to pick Nikita Mazepin, who was like fifth.
Exactly.
Sixth?
Like, there's a point where you, like, you take the money that comes with some talent, but then there's the point where you take the money for, like, nothing really, like, just right. for the money. So, and he,
I mean, like, if Williams pulled in Roy Nassani, like, I would have been like,
right, exactly. Right. But, like, the thing is, like, Mazepin has won races, right? But he finished sixth. Like, he wasn't even top five, you know, he couldn't even make top five in F2.
Mm-hmm.
And he was known to have had temper and, like, driving. Badly, aggressively.
Multiple dangerous driving.
And he was one point off of a race ban mm-hmm. on his license.
He actually physically beat up Kalamila. Like, it's not just like... like, there's a literal history of this guy not being a good driver.
Or a good person.
And also not being a good person. Despite his personal life. Like,
yep.
To his teammates, or not teammates, but to his fellow racers.
Yeah.
Like, I would be like,
yeah.
Someone who actually, like, assaulted another driver mm-hmm. is not okay. Like, I'm not gonna put that on my team.
Yeah.
But then again.
Yeah. We'll see. Money talks, it certainly does. So.
But what's annoying is it's like you could have gotten another paid driver.
Yeah, because it's not like there's a lack of them out there, to be honest.
No. Well, I think that's the thing, though, is, you know, people are always going to be complaining about paid drivers. But that's the literal reality of Formula 2 now, because it's so incredibly expensive to be in that. They all have to be basically some sort of paid driver.
Yeah.
Either they have incredible family money or they have incredible sponsorships. And no hate to either of that. I mean, go for it. I don't care. But I mean, for people complaining, it's like it's not like down to earth enough, and like people aren't like grassroots anymore. Like, it's just not possible.
Yeah,
it's just, like, you can't.
It's just how the world works now. You know, it's not like it's in the bubble of motorsport that's the only circumstance. Definitely not. So
there are very few sports where you can
progress on natural ability alone. Yeah. Unfortunately.
Like, basketball, you can... Natural ability is, like... Basketball, football, I would say. American football.
Yeah.
Are both things, so it's, like, natural.
Like, I would say another example. Tennis is probably really difficult to progress in if you don't have any sponsorships, for sure.
Yeah.
Any sort of, like, athletics, not athletic, well, they're all sports or athletics, but you know, like, you know, like track and field stuff, like you really have to track have like field. Nike sponsorship or whatever to make sure you
anything
can still do
equestrian,
that.
Yeah, super hard.
Anything like polo.
Yeah.
No, for sure. Like you need that sponsorship to even keep yourself running properly.
A lot of like solo sports, I guess.
That's right. Yeah.
More like team sports, you can like work your way up because like yeah. high school, you do good, scouts.
Yep.
Then sponsors up for college and then
yep.
drafted into
yeah.
NBA, NHL,
yeah.
et cetera. NFL.
And I mean, they often have like academies. Like I know football teams in the UK have academies for junior teams mm-hmm. and things. So like that's a thing too. But then it's that's all natural ability based. But then they become your sponsor. So.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you really don't get lucky getting into like the likes of an academy like it is in Formula One, then you're kind of screwed a little bit. So
mm-hmm.
unless you're Nikita Mazepin, who can pay for test drives for Mercedes anyway, so there you go.
Yeah. No, it's just facts, reality, you know.
Yeah, and it's sad that that's how it works, but there's a point yeah. where you just have to like suck it up and accept it.
But I think that's the point I want to make, is that just because that is the reality of the sport right now, it doesn't discount the drives of some of the drivers.
Right. For sure. For sure. All right.
I mean, obviously, like, most of the young drivers now are gonna have some sort of wealthy background. Like, that's just...
Yeah.
Reality.
For sure. So...
Oh, well. But they're still talented.
Maybe we'll see.
I mean, I'm not hating on Lando. I'm not hating on George.
Exactly. I mean, even Alex had, you know, some money behind him.
Oh, speaking of Lando.
What about him?
Speaking... Not really, though. He had just sponsorships for being in Thailand, because there's a whole financial situation with his mom.
Yeah, the fraud thing.
Yeah.
That's the whole thing.
That is the whole thing.
Okay.
I want to touch on Lando really quick, though, because... He just won British Autosport Driver of the Year.
Oh, yeah. Congratulations, so, Lando.
Congratulations to him. Yeah.
Somebody beat nice Lewis, news. Finally.
I know. I was like, wait.
Okay. Good for him. He deserves it. He had a really stellar season this year. So proud of him. Good for him. I think he's on the up and up. I don't think he's peaked at all. As we keep saying throughout the year, he's consistently has been improving. So... No concerns about a plateau in that young man yet. So hopefully he keeps up this season. And I'm excited to get into like predictions and stuff with winter testing coming up. And then also keep your eyes out, guys, because we're going to be doing another helmet highlight on Guan Yu Zhou, because we want to give you guys some more background info on who he is, where he comes from, what's his deal. Why it's going to be such a big deal for Alfa Romeo to have a driver like Guan Yu Zhou. We talked mm-hmm. a little bit about it, but we didn't really go into much detail. So
no.
We're probably planning to do that next week. So if you're interested in hearing more about Guan Yu Zhou as an individual, then keep your eyes and ears out for that.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Also, check out our Kimi one. We like really love doing the Kimi one, and Kimi is a legend.
Yeah, that
so
was great.
Check that out. And also, we did one on Nick DeVries as well, so...
Yeah, back a while ago, but important as well.
Yep.
He doesn't get enough...
He doesn't.
...acknowledgement, credit. I mean, he just won Formula E last year. Like,
and he's, like, still continuing to be quite dominant, so...
Yeah.
That's the thing, too. If you're interested in Formula E, it's sort of a Toto Wolff versus Susie Wolff season, because they're both sort of the top teams right now, which is... Hilarious.
Well, Susie is no longer team principal. She's now CEO,
girl boss. Love that.
She's such a boss. I love her.
Yeah. I mean, I don't see anybody that hates her, which is great.
Truly.
Anyway.
She's doing such a good job.
Right.
Incredible.
Very good. Great, guys.
All right.
Yeah, so keep an eye out for the Guan Yu Zhou. Probably doing that next week. And we'll be making our predictions. In for
soon.
The Speed Trap Championship of 2022, which let's see who comes and wins that one. We both have won each now, so it's a tie. That'll be exciting.
It's a tie.
And then we'll probably also get into silly season a little bit, but that'll probably be later in the season. But yeah,
a little bit later. Yeah.
For now, I think we'll stick to what we've got. Those two, and then our winter testing. We'll probably do a review, see what happens, and we'll probably do a talk about the investigation after what happens next Monday. So, fingers crossed for whatever's going to happen. I don't know what I'm hoping for, but there you go.
I don't know either. I'm just, honestly, the thing that I'm most excited for is just some sort of clarity on the situation.
Transparency is what I'm looking for.
Transparency, clarity, anything that will let us all collectively move on from that, because it's a big bummer that we have to go into the next season with Abu Dhabi still hanging over our head. I want to put it to rest and be able to move on from that, you know?
Hopefully. So with that being said, guys, thanks for listening. We have had quite a lot to talk about today. If there's anything we missed out on, or is anything you want to expand on further, we are on social media at SpeedTrapPod, Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok. And we do host Twitter Spaces, where we talk about all this sort of stuff with everybody else who's involved in F1 Twitter. We quite often have, you know, a few bigger names like Bryson, who's great. Is it Sullivan? Bryson Sullivan? Yes. Yeah, Sullivan. Bryson Sullivan, who is a tech genius. Like, he's like an aerodynamicist. Like, amazing. Anyway.
Yeah, he's done his PhD in, like...
Yeah, in, like, aerospace engineering. So he often joins us for discussions.
And some other, like, really knowledgeable fans and people in the community as well, which is awesome. So we do those most weekends now, if we can get our schedules to work out and things like that, but definitely stay posted on our Twitter and Instagram. We'll post updates on when those are going to happen, and then you can just jump on and please participate. Like, the thing with the Twitter space is that it's awesome is that we don't have to talk the whole time, you know?
Yeah.
Like, that's the space where we want to hear from
all of you guys,
our audience.
Yeah.
Because obviously we can't get all of you guys to be on our podcast and sharing your opinions. So it's wonderful when we get to hear you guys speak for a change instead of us just babbling on and on.
Definitely. And it's really nice to hear you guys as well. It's like reassuring that we might not just hold these opinions ourselves, and at the same time it's good to be challenged about stuff. So
it's inspiring. I think for me, I get a good variety of opinions, some outside perspectives, and that's awesome.
Yeah. All right,
well, thank you for listening, and if you would like to donate to us, that would be amazing. We really need it right now. The software, it's really expensive.
It definitely, yeah.
Software hurts. It hurts.
It does.
Anyways, yes, if you'd like to donate, you can head to anchor.fm/speed-trap-pod and hit the donate button. We would appreciate it so much. Like I said, truly, truly, truly. And if you're not able to, just keep listening, and please just share it on social media. Tell your friends and family about it. We would love that. Just as much.
Thank you for listening to the Speed Trap Podcast.
As always, we appreciate your support.
To stay involved in the conversation, reach out to us on social media at Speed Trap Pod.
Speed Trap's official music was created and produced by Boxed Okami. You can find more of his work on Instagram at Boxed Okami.
See you next week.